Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome in to a very special morning after episode here on Friends from Work. It's a pot of shame because we watched Deadpool and Wolverine last night, recorded our initial reactions, and yet today, here we are showing up to work, just punching our time card, rushing an episode out for all y'all on all the crazy stuff that Marvel has going on. How are you feeling the morning after?
Well, I was realizing even before we saw the movie yesterday, because of you and I's schedule, we have not, I think we maybe said this, but they like peel back the curtain a bit. We had to kind of front load some of our recording. So you and I recorded the last few episodes that people have heard weeks ago.
That's right.
So we have not, part of the fun of this episode is we haven't gotten to discuss several pretty big developments.
Yeah.
I mean, the world in general has shifted a lot.
That's true too.
Since the last time we talked.
A president backing out, an assassination attempt.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, the MCU is back.
And Austin has a lot of rain now instead of sun.
Yeah. Who knew? That's nice. Everything's topsy-turvy.
Okay, so here's what today's gonna be, because I know these episodes can be kind of weird because people fall into different camps. Some people, like my wife, shout out Annika, who is not listening to this right now because they see Deadpool in the title and they don't want anything spoiled. And so for those people, if you are listening, we're going to put the Deadpool spoiler-free reaction, just a few minutes of it, at the end of this episode, post an ad break. So don't get worried. We're not going to talk about it at all other than saying it was the morning after. We're going to talk about these other things that are safe to talk about and are massive. You and I have been on Discord chatting about these, et cetera. But because of what you said, we haven't had a chance to do an episode about it, which is super weird. So we're going to do those things first. The Deadpool stuff will be later.
And we haven't even really gotten to talk about them yet. Kind of true to the way we like to do the podcast. I think when the trailers first dropped, you know, you and I kind of exchanged initial brief like, oh, that was fun. But we haven't really gotten into it. I've only seen these new trailers that have released once each. So I'm actually really excited for what we're about to do.
Yep. So a little bit of news at the top.
Yep.
Then the Agatha trailer. We'll go chronologically. Then the Brave New World trailer. Then Deadpool and Wolverine. The breaking news that we have to talk about that you and I literally have not even texted about, which is mind-blowing to think that we haven't talked about this yet. It's not 100% official. Mm-hmm. In fact, Kevin Feige played it coy and downplayed it. But the heavy rumor is that the Russo brothers are back in talks with Marvel. And the implication seems to be that they're not just talking, that it's like going to happen.
Yeah.
That they are going to be directing Avengers 5 and 6, which as of now were originally entitled Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, but now could be a Secret Wars part 1 and 2. Part of that rumor is that Marvel is working to slightly get away from the Kang dynasty of it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously given the Jonathan Majors side of this all.
Right.
Although I will also say I read a rumor that at the same time, they've also recasted Kang or that they're very close.
Yeah.
So who knows? It's not going away entirely. That being said, my immediate reaction to the Rousseau brothers coming back was actually pure joy, I think. And it's weird because this podcast has been out there saying, I'm okay with somebody else taking it, taking their shot at it. I'm okay with them going a different direction because we've gotten the best possible Rousseau brothers.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Yeah.
And my negative reaction would be, our manager Pete said this, I really don't want it to be framed online as Marvel is admitting they've totally messed up. Like there's already a meme going around of the Rousseau brothers on Thanos' head saying, you could not live with your own failure and where did that bring you back to me? So like, I don't love that perspective. You know that. Anytime we get into the territory of being like, everything they've made since Endgame is terrible, then I get really checked out. Like that's just bogus. You haven't watched it. You're not paying attention.
Yeah.
So I don't like that conversation.
It's lazy.
It's lazy. And that's not, I don't think that's the case with the Rousseau brothers. The reason it's 90% joy now is just because it's impossible to deny the track record. For me, Winter Soldier is a top 10 film. Some people, it's like a top 3 film.
Yeah.
For me, it's in the top 10, but that would be the lowest film they've made.
Yeah.
Like quality-wise, if you hire the Russos, you know you're going to get a Winter Soldier, Civil War, Infinity War, or Endgame level movie. And so we've, on this podcast, struggled. Who could handle a cast like Secret Wars? And we haven't come up with crazy slam dunk names to do that. And so I don't think it's crazy wrong to go, look, four of the best movies ever made were made by the same guys. They haven't had a miss in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
They've said they want to come back for Secret Wars.
Uh-huh.
It kind of feels at this point like a no-brainer, even though I know that's Marvel tying their bandwagon to one group of people.
I've thought about this a lot recently because there have been these rumors about the Spider-Man casting. And I think I brought this up on the podcast briefly. Greg and I have had this kind of ongoing exchange that I think is going to come out in our next newsletter. So plugging our Substack, which like our Discord is totally free. You can get that on our website. But anyway, we've been talking about these different directors that have been tossed around. And I had said that what I really wanted to see was a Russo-Marcus McFeely Spider-Man trilogy. Because you and I have both talked about how much we love the way they introduced the character in Civil War. I think it's impossible to overstate how well they did that. Like, we give John Watts so much credit, and like deservedly, but the ingredients were there. You know, like they gave us, like, even from the moment the Alt-JQ hits.
Pause. Just to reiterate, I mean, the way they handled Black Panther and Spider-Man in that movie is so spectacular in a movie that already has so much going on to bring in characters of that magnitude and have it work. I've said before, the actual quipping from Peter in that film is elite.
Yeah. Oh, it's like even the, it's like a, there's a difference, and I like it. I think story-wise it makes sense that he's kind of playing as more confident, and then you see him in Homecoming, and you kind of get the more like vulnerable teenager.
For sure.
Which I love. But yeah, it's like, to your point, I don't think we've ever seen that. Like, I'm trying to think of any other Marvel movie that has introduced new characters in a way that, like, you know, because Civil War, the point of the movie is not Black Panther and Spider-Man. Like, that's the really interesting thing. But they're both introduced so well. They both then went on to massively successful franchises that had their roots there. Again, Ryan Coogler said the same thing whenever he's talked about...
That he's grateful for that introduction?
Yeah, I mean, he said that, like, he can never... Because he didn't cast Chadwick. Like, that was all done with the Civil War team. And so, like... Even the dialect, like so much of what we now know as Wakanda, again, Ryan Coogler did so much there, but like the way that they were able to introduce not just characters, but entire mythologies within this movie that had also a really complex plot is crazy. And I just
absolutely
don't
think, insane.
Like, and I'm trying to think to compare it.
So let's be clear. We also think the Rousseau brothers would smash a Spider-Man trilogy. I mean, crush.
And that's part of why, like, I think my hesitation about an Avengers movie from them was initially the worry that it's going to be held up against Endgame no matter what.
For sure. A downside. Yep.
And that there's just kind of like, is there anywhere to go but down from a, you
for
know.
For sure a concern.
But at the same time, like while that's a concern, to your point, I'm thinking through not just Marvel movies, but all superhero movies dealing with ensemble casts like that. And I think
they've made the three best.
I don't even think it's the only one that I think is a legitimate contender would be the first Avengers film, which was clunkier, but also kind of laid the groundwork for what the Russos were able to do. But even then, like all of those main characters had films already, right? Like Whedon came in and was able to utilize what Captain America, the first Avenger, had laid down for Cap, and what Kenneth Branagh did for Thor. And then obviously all of that's rooted in what Jon Favreau did for Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with Civil War, that was different. And even with Winter Soldier, like I think about like that's kind of a unique movie where without being a big team up film, it really like moved the ball forward for the MCU. Like if you look back at like the essential just to the narrative movies, like Winter Soldier is like it deals with the collapse of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was kind of the framework for everything that came before. But it also winds up being this really great Captain America movie. It makes, I think that's that movie like levels up Natasha's character a lot.
Yep.
Gives you Falcon, who winds up being a mainstay.
Yep.
The Winter Soldier character, like Bucky.
Yep.
So it's like, as I'm thinking about that movie, Civil War, Infinity War, obviously being the best example of like juggling a lot of characters, I don't even know what, like the second place is so distant. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, good point.
Like, I don't even know if there's maybe James Gunn, just in the way he was able to introduce all these new unknown characters, but even that's a different skill set.
Back to the Spider-Man trilogy, Civil War introduced all those characters, and then juggling that was the first time we saw the Russos have that kind of feat.
Right.
But to your point, Winter Soldier not only juggled a lesser cast, but still there had the rebranding of an already beloved character with Captain America.
Yeah.
That we think, I think you would agree with me, would be really fun for Spider-Man, right? Like we've had the young trilogy, whatever. Now Spider-Man kind of needs his Winter Soldier moment.
That's exactly what I was saying.
Where
the other
all of a sudden there's going to be a super grounded with Daredevil in it,
yeah,
type Spider-Man that's having to grow up. He's got older, yeah, relationships, and it's like, you know, like Captain America, the core of him is still in both of those films.
Yeah.
But it's a total black suit, short hair rebranding of, uh-huh, what Captain America can look like and feel like.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man is in need of that. Not because the trilogy was bad. The trilogy that John Watts made was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But just because that's the next logical step. And I think that's where our Russo brother thing came from. But anyways, this is not, yeah, about them,
no,
directing Spider-Man. It's just, I guess, because now they can't direct Spider-Man, if that's the case.
Unless this is... Yeah, I mean, I do think that would be... That, like, what I love about that, and then I'll move to Secret Wars, is just that you don't have the expectations game in the same way. It's kind of more apples and oranges. And the Winter Soldier piece really is the key to that, because it's not just that they successfully redefined the character. They, like you said, successfully redefined him while also very much honoring the foundation that had been laid. And I think with a new Spider-Man series, whoever comes in is going to have to be able to do that, because the John Watts trilogy is so great. And that's like, that's another kind of juggling act, like figuring out, like we get those little flashbacks to like Steve and Bucky that like they even kind of take on the Joe Johnson aesthetic then and like do the kind of like sepia tone. And that stuff feels like it could have come straight out of that first movie. But that's that's actually the other part of this that I want to talk about with Secret Wars. To me, the big, like every time we talk about the Russos, almost every time we talk about the Russos, I think we're actually also talking about Marcus and McFeely.
Good point. Surely they're bringing the band back together. I've
heard rumors that if the Russos come...
Apparently Marcus McFeely actually work at Agbo now.
Didn't know that. I mean, I know that they did that. I never saw the Gray Man movie. Did you? With
yeah, we talked about this. Yeah.
It's a pretty good
action movie. It's not great.
But I think that's Marcus McFeely and the Russos, right?
I know it's the Russos. I didn't know if it was Marcus McFeely. But my point is they're still around. I can't see a world that the Russo brothers get invited to do this, want to do it, and then they go, you know what? Let's start a different writing team, right? Like, it's been such a smash. But to your point,
yeah.
I do think the Russos are totally capable regardless. So if it comes out that it is written by someone else, I'm still going to have
high
hopes. But yeah. It really is the four of them that we're referencing. In fact, if you go all the way back to our conversation with Matthew Berry, who was on set with the Endgame experience, he talked about that it was also Marcus and McFeely, like that they were there, that they were chiming in, that they were encouraging to him. Like, he obviously loves the Russos, but he specifically shouted out Marcus and McFeely.
Dude, I feel so strongly about that because
I know you do. Yeah.
Like, as I was going back and I'm excited to talk about this too, once we have some more downtime. But I was kind of, I don't know, like with all the talk about the MCU getting so like one, people getting so excited about Deadpool and Wolverine, and two, things like just being generally overwhelming in terms of what's happened since Endgame. I've realized like, it's kind of fun, not just to find the multiverse thread, but like to step back now that we've like got enough distance from the Infinity Saga and actually see what the, like if there is a core thread there, just plot wise. And so much of that is written by Marcus and McFeely. It's wild. Like,
for sure.
Starting with the first Avenger, you know, like all the way through to where
they were there before the Russos.
Yeah. Like if, I mean, and the interesting thing there is like their first two movies that they did, they could have, we talked about this way back in the day, easily been written off as like, these guys aren't really it. Like Captain America 1 was like good, but didn't blow anybody away. Thor 2 was at the time the worst movie that they had done. But then once they
shout out Thor: Dark World,
once they linked up with the Russos,
yeah,
suddenly you had like
magic.
It was
magical.
It was the engine of the MCU. Like, yeah.
We've talked about that for hours, but yeah, tough to almost recreate. Like it would almost, it was like lightning in a bottle.
And I think that's what we've realized since. Like it's the same thing with, it's like with Nolan or something. Like you can't, we've seen people try to redo like,
sure.
The like really gritty
his vibe,
and it just doesn't work unless you're him like that. Like there are, and so there's a part of me that thinks, while I don't want this to be perceived as a step backwards,
right?
I think that you're right that there's lightning in a bottle there, and I also think it's interesting that like the Russos have not really, like even when they've worked with Marcus and McFeely, when they've worked with Tom Holland, like they haven't really had. They haven't regained that since Endgame either.
There are so, that's not where I thought you were going to end that sentence. That's also true. That is a factor. I've brought this up before with Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans. When you talk about like where their careers have gone since, I do think that slightly influences not their feelings on the MCU, but the fact that the Russos, it's not like they've gone on to smashing success after smashing success where it's like, guys, we're doing other stuff. They kind of need it. They don't need it, but they would like it too. I think that era was fun for them.
And I think like
they made the biggest movie in the world.
Oh, I mean, so well and with so much passion that like,
Where the whole thing is an insane lightning in the bottle, because the further you zoom out and you read all these books about the whole story, it's Robert Downey Jr. It's Jon Favreau. It's the fact that Kevin Feige is the way he is and the passion he has for it. And then the Russos and Marcus McFeely teaming up. I would say those, what is that? Seven people like are such a perfect storm. Like if any one of those pieces was a different person or a different personality or didn't feel as invested or didn't have the comic background or didn't have the passion, it wouldn't have worked. That's why I say it's the 1% of the 1%.
Yeah. No, you're, I mean, because if you think about like when we did like our Mount Rushmore, like even if you, like if you pull out James Gunn, you can still have Avengers Endgame be the moment it was. Like, I think you lose a lot of like certain types of humor that worked really well, but like, and you can maybe even make the argument for Whedon because like we said in that episode, so much of what he was doing was building on what had been established in the Iron Man films tonally.
Right.
But yeah, I just think that I do not know anybody else as a writer or a filmmaker that could have taken us through from like the end of phase two to the culmination of the Infinity Saga the way that they did. And so I say all that because I think that like this idea that they haven't met success in the same way since leaving the MCU could be seen as this like, oh, it's kind of pathetic that they have to come back. But I don't view it that way because I actually think that that's just a like a wrong way to view someone as a creative force. Because like this idea that like, oh, they can only do this, like they're a one trick pony. We don't say that when we're talking about like Arthur Conan Doyle writing Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, right. Good point.
Like we're not like, oh, well, but that's all he could do is write Sherlock Holmes.
Harry
like,
Potter or Lucas.
Right.
Or, yeah.
Like, or Tolkien only ever did Middle Earth stuff, really. Like no one's like, but that's all he did. Like we're in this world now where it's like, oh, but you know, they can't move and go do like, you know, they're not like Nolan. They can't do The Dark Knight and Oppenheimer. But also like, I don't know that that has to be a flaw. Like even down to like Stan Lee, like Stan Lee is one of the most influential writers in history at this point, based on like the impact he's had.
And is pretty much a one trick pony.
Right. Like that is, I think that there's something special.
That's not a
bad thing. Right. Like that's just, that is their like that there's something in them, in that team where it's just like everything clicks.
That's why I say if the Russo brothers bring back Marcus and McFeely and they are doing the next two Avengers, let's just go back to what do we know? We know it's going to have the highest quality possible. Mm-hmm. The writing is going to be so clever and satirical and, yeah, and just smart, and it's going to feel right.
But tight.
It's going to be tight, and the action is going to be awesome, and it's going to have such a grounded feel to mm-hmm. a very cosmic level thing. And they know how to balance a cast. And yeah. they know how to give proper introductions to new characters that would show up in this. And they have a love for all of this stuff, including Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., and Hugh Jackman, Wolverine. Like, no one's going to care.
And Secret Wars as
no
a comic.
No one is going to, exactly. No one at, I can tell you right now, in 3 years, no one's going to care that Marvel had to, quote, go back to the Russo brothers when Wolverine yeah. and Spider-Man and...
Right.
And Iron Man are all on the camera on the at the same time. You know, like,
yeah.
no one's going to care.
Well, and, you know, it's one of these conversations where I remember, like, Christopher Nolan is the exception, not the rule these days, where it's like there are, it's hard, like, I obviously love movies. We both love movies a ton. We talk about how Candace and I just, we watch so many movies. It's like the, it's our main hobby. Obviously, given this podcast, but like, so we're very aware of directors. You and I are aware of all these directors and writers within the MCU. But I think the other big piece of this is like, I don't know that most people even care, like, or like are paying attention to this stuff. Like, I think that at the end of the day, like we had these debates over the last couple of years of like, what does it mean for Marvel to like go back? Like they should push forward and bring in like new, like fresh blood. But it's like, that is for the people that are really picking this stuff apart. But the average person just wants a great movie. And I don't think it's worth, like, it's not worth making a worse movie just to show people that you're, like, moving forward in some undefinable way.
Good point.
So I would, man, I'm like, I am with you. Like the only, like that only concern is the comparison game. But
yep.
I, even
yep.
as I'm saying it, I just don't know it that most people
eventually.
Would. Yeah.
Plus is as Marvel puts out banger after banger, like with Deadpool and Wolverine,
right,
and
right.
then there's going to be a banger next year with Fantastic Four and Thunderbolts. Yeah. And if Captain America is awesome, people will will forget and they'll less feel like, even though the Russo brothers will already be hired making the movie, they'll forget that Marvel was, quote, down and they needed the Russos to save them, you know? So it won't be a thing.
That's the funny thing with these narratives.
And who cares?
Who
cares if in the end Marvel Studios is known for the partnership of Kevin Feige, the Russos, Marcus McFeely, and Robert Downey Jr.? Who cares if that's what they're, again, to your one trick pony, like, who cares if that's what they're known
maybe
for?
Maybe that's like, that's Marvel Studios, you know? Like, maybe that's, I think, and that's part of this whole era. I don't know, like, there's a part of me that feels like Marvel has been going through something of a midlife crisis. Like, not even in, like, that is not a commentary on the quality of things, just like the narrative, like what they're trying to be. Like, when you look at how, the difference in approach between Iger and Chapek and then now coming back, like, it seemed for a while like they had a really good idea of what they wanted to be. And then after Endgame, it felt like that was a natural point to try something new.
Which is totally fair that they have a midlife crisis after Endgame.
Right. Like, it's like, now it's like, what are we doing? Like, what's the, but.
Everybody was asking that question.
And I think you're right. I think that by the time we get there, people are going to be just excited to have another Avengers movie. And I think the other piece of that with like the running it back and the comparison game, I'm sitting here thinking like, that's going to happen anytime you have a movie that has Avengers in front of it now. It doesn't matter.
The next Avengers film is going to be measured against Endgame regardless. Yeah.
It could be directed by no-name. It could
be
directed by...
Every comic movie is still measured against Endgame. I mean, even last night, you see the tweets of, what does everybody say? They say, this is the best movie since Endgame. Right. This is one of the best movies since Endgame. It's not as good as Endgame, but it's really great. You know, like, that's what everyone uses as the measuring stick now. That's like anything. That's like Michael Jordan's Bulls.
Yeah.
Whenever there's a great team now, people go, well, is it better than Jordan's Bulls? Is it better than the 2017, whatever it is, Warriors? Like, they're measuring sticks.
And that's a great, like, that's such a great comparison because we've talked about how sometimes I think the sports analogies get unhelpful in movie context and the way that people look at them as like winning or losing.
The fandom culture,
But I think that like the team aspect, that's really interesting because as much as we talk about like, you know, if you're a Bulls fan, you're a Bulls fan. It is different to be a Bulls fan now than it is to be a Bulls fan in the 90s. Like,
for sure.
Those are different teams.
And the fandom still goes on. Meaning, when Jordan retired, I'm sure there were some fans that checked out from the Bulls.
Right.
But there are diehard Bulls fans that still now want to see their organization do well and win. Yeah. And they don't just quit just because, we had it good then.
Yeah.
You know?
No, but it is like, you know, whenever he, not his like retirement and coming back to the Wizards, because we don't need to talk about that, but his like, even his brief retirement and coming back to the Bulls, you know, it's kind of like, they were still the Bulls, but like, any, like that's the unique thing. I'm sure it'll be the same with like the Patriots and Brady down the line, and but it's like.
There's a thought in the back of your head as a fan that it probably won't ever be the same again.
Because there was something there, right? Like there's something about like whether it's Phil Jackson or Michael Jordan or both or Scottie Pippen, like the entire like.
Oh, I love your knowledge. It's turning me on right now.
There are little bits in there, but it's
Phil
like
Phil Jackson drop on the podcast. Let's go.
There's something there that like it was lightning in a bottle. Like, and you've had plenty of great basketball teams since then. That people are always measuring against that, but they're always measuring it against that, right? And so I think for me here, like, yes, there will be a time where if Marvel Studios is still going and, you know, 20 years or something, they will not be able to just stick with RDJ and the Russos. But if the Russos are around and Marcus and McFeely are around, and like you can bring Michael Jordan back onto the Bulls whenever he's still like at the top of his game.
Yeah, it's prime Jordan.
Yeah, like
you would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it would be dumb not to. Like I can't. So I think
give me prime Griffey right now. Give me prime Ken Griffey Jr. wow, this is such perfect, typical Friends from Work fashion, because we're like, let's just throw this all into one episode and we'll just quick mention the Russos and that'll be 5 minutes and then we'll do the next part. So that was part one.
Yeah.
That's part one of the episode. We're going to take a quick break. I want you to do two things. Go get you some refreshments wherever you're listening to this, and go rewatch the Agatha All Along and the Captain America Brave New World trailers right now during this break. Pause this. Go watch them. That's what we're going to be talking about next in part two, with Deadpool and Wolverine coming up in part three. We'll be right back. So I wanted this part to be quick, but I have so many thoughts rewatching the Agatha All Along trailer. Like, maybe more than I even have for Captain America.
Ooh, okay, I love this.
Because I feel like the show and the trailer are kind of broken into two sections for me. Also, shout out trailers in general. I feel like we've talked about this. Like, Marvel has significantly stepped up their game in the trailer department, I think,
from
5 years ago, 7 years ago.
For sure.
Like, the very first shot of that trailer of Agatha still as the Agatha, or as the, like, the very beginning of that trailer where she's still a detective.
Yeah.
And the music is eerie. My concern is that that's only going to be like the first episode, and then she's going to have to break out of it. Like, I don't think they're going to spend a lot of time in that, but I do love that vibe. Like, kicking off the trailer with that took me by surprise.
Yeah.
I just didn't think about, I guess I assumed we'd just kind of catch up and she'd be broken out of the spell, but I didn't think about, like,
yeah,
she's still living a life that she doesn't recognize because she's under Wanda's spell. And I also never really thought of it as Wanda being gone being the trigger of why she could get out of that. I know that's obvious, but I shouldn't really think about that being a thing.
I actually don't think I thought about that until this moment.
Then my next thought is,
so you're saying, like, what happens to Wanda in Multiverse of Madness?
Yes, and I'm not even saying that linearly, though. There are rumors or theories that that Wanda that you see there laying on the ground is actually the other Multiverse of Madness Wanda, like the one that she dark walked, what is it called? Dream walked in the body of, whatever universe that was. My point is, there's theories that that's not Wanda Maximoff from the Sacred Timeline, Wanda Maximoff.
So
I don't even know how it would connect, but I just love the idea of, well, not only just seeing her name, but just that her dying or losing some hold of the power or some of the Darkhold being gone, something affecting Agatha's ability to get out of that spell, and that being kind of the trigger moment.
So, okay, I want to, this is where I'm going to act like I'm a 4-year-old, I guess. And you can explain this to me. I've realized
explain it to me like I'm 5.
I have not been, I've realized I just haven't really talked about this trailer much.
Yep.
Everyone I've talked to about it, this is one that I've been really happy to hear non-MCU fan reactions to.
Yeah. Like,
a lot of my friends are really excited for this, that are not people that, like, I haven't heard them talk about Deadpool and Wolverine, which is interesting, but I've heard them talk about this, like, a certain sect of people that, like, really loved WandaVision and look back on that era so fondly, but, like, maybe haven't, like, they're not, like, Marvel heads. That was just a moment for them, and I think that they feel like this could recapture that.
I also love this syncing up with the Halloween season.
Yeah, for sure.
So even if it is kind of campy, I think by putting it at Halloween, a la Werewolf by Night,
yeah,
it kind of buys you a little bit of that, like buys you some camp you can do.
And man, like I loved the, I thought the Halloween episode of WandaVision was so fun. But what I was going to say is, you talk about the body there. I'm going to be asking this all through this trailer and maybe through the Captain America one too, because I've only seen them once before this morning. That's supposed to be Wanda's body on the ground?
First of all, reminder, nobody knows anything. It could be misleading. Could be a red herring. But it zooms in on her hands, and they have those black tips. And she's wearing kind of the same hoodie that other Wanda was wearing. Remember the mom Wanda had, like, hoodie and jeans on?
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same outfit. And then she's saying, man, I just have a sneaking suspicion this is not who we think as a suspect. And then it fills in Wanda Maximoff, maybe as if like that's the Wanda Maximoff that has died. That being said, I still have questions with that if that is the leading theory. There are a lot of things you could obviously ask. Like the Wanda in the sacred timeline, if she did die, she died as the Scarlet Witch, not wearing that. Is it possible that any witch that starts using dark magic or something, their hands start becoming black? Or whenever a witch loses her power, maybe that's the same look, regardless, right? Like, why would that be?
Yeah, because Agatha had
that be the Wanda Maximoff from Westview,
right?
Right, like she broke free of that.
Well, and Agatha had the black fingers at the end of WandaVision, right?
Right. So my point is they're all theories at this time, but...
But yeah, I wasn't sure what, like, the name showing up on that card. Like, obviously, it's meant to show, like, you're caught in the spell, and this is, like, the person that's controlling you.
Okay, I think the 4-year-old version of this is that Agatha is a detective. She doesn't realize she's under a spell. That's Herb. Herb's the police chief.
Right, which I love.
They find a dead body. It looks awfully like Wanda Maximoff. She must not know who Wanda is because she's under a spell.
Right.
And she doesn't think it's Wanda. So whatever the face is of that dead body, they roll over. Then she says, I have a sneaking suspicion it's not, you know, Jane Doe. And then it fills in that it was maybe Wanda Maximoff.
Okay. Yeah. That's fun.
So that's all the positive side. And in general, the trailer got me way more stoked than I thought. I would say then my two concerns are still, one, we've talked about, is the show even necessary? That is definitely the leading critique of thought, school of thought for amongst people who are not into this, or, oh, Disney's back to, you know, Disney's going to Disney.
Yeah.
Those people are kind of in the camp of, is this needed? Like WandaVision was a success. Do I need this story? And I still don't know that I do.
Yeah.
But I think it still could be really fun. And then the second part of me is like, there are a few shots in there that definitely, like the Witch's Road idea and what that looks like, feels very like Disney Witch.
It feels Disney Channel.
Which we didn't love.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're leaning into that, or is that just a little sequence, or like, you know, the witches putting their hands in a circle. So I'm like right in the middle in that, the beginning of that trailer and some of the Halloweenness of it gets me really excited.
Yeah.
And then there are these things that I'm like, huh? Like, would Aubrey Plaza sign up for a Disney Channel witch show? I don't think so.
But that's what's so weird is, like, behind all of this, there's been this conversation that this show, people that are, like, the people working on it are mega, mega excited about it. Like,
right. And it's Jack Schaefer.
Yeah. Who not only gave us WandaVision, but also gave us Black Widow. To some degree, like she had like a story credit, and that's a pretty grounded story.
I trust her.
So it's not as though she's like, I mean, yes, we got that one and a half episode of WandaVision where we kind of got more of that. But yeah, I think that's my fear too. I don't, like, I thought Werewolf by Night was perfect at, like, in the way that it did the campy Halloween thing. And if this does strike that balance, even in a different way, I would love that. I think my, like, the unease that I would feel going in is, yeah, don't get so, like, don't be too indulgent, maybe, is my fear. Like, don't like recognize. I think that's the thing about phase 4 and phase 5 stuff that, maybe phase 4 specifically, that I think.
Phase 5 has been pretty great.
Like, yeah, and I think it's generally just more, like, more consistent tonally. Phase 4, I think the, you know, the irony is Marvel gave everyone exactly what a lot of critics had said they didn't do.
Directors to have leeway.
Right. Like, let's try they took this idea that, like, oh, you know, we have Winter Soldier and we have Guardians and we can do both of those genres under one umbrella, and like dialed it all the way up to 11. And so now we had like straight up through and through comedies. And then we have like Werewolf by Night, which is like this black and white kind of classic Halloween special. And a lot of those things almost all of them work to some degree. And I think that it's really telling that people disagree on which ones worked and which didn't.
For sure.
But I think here, like, it just reminds me that for me, the times when things didn't work as well as whenever there's a director or a writer or a team where they go too far with it. Like, they're having, like, those are the moments of Love and Thunder where I'm like, someone needed to be there to tell Taika, like, this one joke too many. Like, this is still, like, we're still trying to keep it within these certain boundaries, and that's not a bad thing. Like, that's you know,
we love that stuff.
And so I do think that's what I want here. Like, I just want to make sure that there's someone that's, like, looking at the big picture that's like, that's a little too silly. Let's not do that.
And that's where I'll just end this conversation by saying, I have to believe that's happening only because of the cultural narrative around what's been going on. I just can't. Well, it's possible, but I don't see them leading off their rebooted television with the same problems they had.
Especially when it's such a moment to, like,
restart.
Yeah, I mean,
not like, restart, but you know what I mean.
No, I mean, I think that the same kinds of conversations we've had about Deadpool and Wolverine, not since seeing the movie, but ahead of time, where it's like, okay, this is a, we've had this narrative. Marvel, I think, in part because of the insane press push that they've done for Deadpool and Wolverine, where you can't look at anything that isn't a picture of Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman together. Like, I think everyone is kind of paying attention again for the moment. And then we have this Agatha show that's following up on what I think most people would consider to be their favorite Marvel television show. Loki is the only other contender there. And I think after that, in terms of like general opinion, it's not even really close. So like they have the follow up there and they have this cast, like you're saying, with Aubrey Plaza, but also Catherine Hahn, who was a real favorite in that original show. Like, it seems like they have an opportunity here that they would want to be very careful not to squander. So I think you're right. Like, I have to think there's someone that's playing that role. Maybe it's Kevin. Like, maybe he's taking more of a hands-on approach again now that they're putting out less stuff.
Maybe it's these new showrunners they're coming up with, or, you know, like the TV stuff. Like, remember they had kind of created like a head of television now.
And yeah.
Like, so we'll see.
I mean, I will say, having just recently rewatched Loki season 2, like, the narrative around the stuff is always so weird in terms of what was being produced when and what came out. And like, we've gotten Echo since then, which was good for the most part. Not like excellent, but good. But I think that was really like an outlier in terms of like a really troubled production and a show that they had gotten too far into and then realized maybe they shouldn't have greenlit. So I almost don't really like to look at that as fitting in this narrative.
Agreed.
But if you look at Loki season 2 as them like, because in some ways this is WandaVision season 2 in terms of the creators and the characters. And so if you're going one for one there, man, like, Loki season 2 is
so special.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost perfect.
Agreed.
And so that makes me excited too. And it makes me think that, like, whatever the current state of Marvel television is, they do have folks that know how to keep like a steady hand on the wheel.
Agreed. Okay, then we also got a new trailer, kind of surprisingly early to me, for Captain America Brave New World. So for me, I think, on a few episodes, we've talked about what are our most anticipated projects of the next couple of years or so. I think we did just next year. I don't know. A couple of years. Uh-huh. I would say that this was the bottom for me. And not in that I don't like the MCU, but if I had to list them, Ironheart would be the bottom as far as my most anticipated projects. And then I think this would have been right there, second.
Yeah.
This trailer almost single-handedly for me turned me around.
Like, I love that. I told you.
I was like a 5 out of 10 about Agatha pre-trailer.
Yeah.
Post-trailer, I'm like a 6.5 out of 10, 7 out of 10. I was like a 4 out of 10 for Captain America 4, and now I'm like an 8 or a 9 out of 10 just based on a single trailer. And I know that's prisoner of the moment. I think you're right. I don't think I realized how much I'd be missing the grounded nature. Like you said this to me in a text. If the MCU doesn't consistently remind you of these style of movies, like this grounded nature, you start feeling kind of disconnected with the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like the cosmic stuff, the space stuff, the multiverse stuff, the time travel stuff is really, really fun. But at its core,
yeah,
going back to our first discussion, it's kind of a Russo Brothers, Iron Man, Marcus and McFeely,
yeah,
Captain America ground level conflict. And just seeing it again, addressing the director Ross of it all. Addressing
felt that very, he's, Don Cheadle.
Perfect. They're so good at it. They're so good at doing it. Addressing the I'm not Steve Rogers thing just right off the bat.
Yeah.
For people who are like, wait, that's not Steve Rogers, you know, who haven't seen anything.
Yeah.
Man. It just to me, I don't know. It's good.
So I have so many thoughts on this. That I didn't realize I had until we just rewatched it. First, in terms of like looking ahead at this movie, before this trailer dropped, like I've been saying, I've been kind of going through a sort of rewatch, getting ready for Deadpool. And I went through these Marcus McFeely films with Cap and I think just Captain America, or sorry, just Civil War and Infinity War and Endgame. But I was paying special attention to Anthony Mackie because I knew that we were likely getting an announcement or a trailer soon. And, you know, I think that in fairness to you, this conversation is complicated because Falcon Winter Soldier is generally seen as one of the least successful Marvel television outings. And he was very much like Anthony Mackie's character was the focus of that. So it's not as though like you've kind of lost some of the, like, what does it look like to see Sam Wilson as Captain America? Cause we got it. And we got it in a way that wasn't like really spectacular. But as I'm going back and watching those other movies and thinking about how, like, you know, you and I agreed that, that maybe Kerry Scoglin's directing on Falcon Winter Soldier was a big part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's dialed in, which is every other way I've ever seen him in the MCU, except for Falcon and Winter Soldier. I think he's such a great, like, grounded force. Like, he's funny, but he's not just comic relief. Like, I really like the way he's introduced in Winter Soldier. And I like the way they follow up on a lot of that in Falcon Winter Soldier, the show. But I just don't think that like whatever was going on with that production, it didn't really play to his strengths for some reason. But like the part, even what I'm seeing from Anthony Mackie in this trailer feels like the Anthony Mackie Falcon that we got in those early appearances that I think quickly became like a core supporting cast member of the Captain America circle, but also like is a perfect person to take over that thread. So I'm agreed. Like, that makes me really excited.
Agreed. The Harrison Fordness makes me really excited too.
Oh, it's just an Air Force One sequel, Air Force Two.
But also, who plays a better, like, grumpy old president?
Yeah.
Plus, it makes sense with it being Ross. Like that being the logical progression. Yeah. By the way, I don't know if you saw this. This trailer was made before the Donald Trump assassination attempt.
They
have apparently a version of this, they've been editing out the Isaiah Bradley attempted assassination scene.
Wow. I did not.
So that's a whole different level of what we want to get into than probably.
Well, so that's, I'm glad you brought up the Isaiah Bradley thing. Cause I think in light of what I just said, my biggest surprise in this trailer was not the Red Hulk thing. Cause I feel like people had been chattering about that character appearing and the leader showing up, that kind of made sense, but I still want to talk about it in a second.
Yes.
But the biggest surprise to me was that we got two characters from the Falcon Winter Soldier show spotlighted in the trailer, one being Joaquin Torres. Is that the actor or the character? I forget. And then Isaiah Bradley, the character, which if you didn't watch Falcon Winter Soldier, I'm sure it's fine. Like, they'll explain it. But I thought that was kind of a like, I didn't know how much they would expect people to have followed along.
And let's also just say that it's really fun for us fans to have this stuff so connected now.
Yeah.
Like, even if you didn't watch it, it's cool that we can be like, that's Isaiah Bradley.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Dude, and it makes like the Isaiah Bradley story, like, I don't know in what context that shows up, but it makes that heartbreaking.
I know.
Like,
it's, I love it though.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
almost like it almost seems like it's a relapse in the, like his anger.
Yeah.
Like in a cool way, because I think that one
or
action yeah. he's doing. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he's like mind controlled at that moment or something. Who knows?
And cause we don't know, like, I think that, you know, the leader as a villain, he's probably the main Hulk villain, I guess. And he's basically just the Hulk, except instead of it being like a body strength, it's all in his
brain.
So, I mean, it would make sense that he's like controlling people for somehow.
Sure. And maybe that's it. And if it's not that, I do like that it makes the Falcon and Winter Soldier stuff with Isaiah that much more heartbreaking.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean,
it's almost heavier now.
Oh, yeah. Either way, I think looking at this from the comics perspective, which I think about a lot now, not for specific stories, but kind of like how do you kind of move forward from a big finale, you know, because you'll have these finales of like runs in comics. Then another writer comes in and takes over and kind of tells a new story that will have its own finale. And I just think there have been so many moments like that in Marvel where it's like in the 70s, things get crazy big and cosmic. And then like in different ways, it kind of gets brought back down. Like the 80s were a lot grimmer. Like you had like the kind of like Frank Miller type style emerging. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing, like the 90s got really like kind of like out there in a lot of ways. And turned a lot of people off eventually because people felt like they didn't have an anchor. And then in the 2000s, which really spawned the MCU, as we've talked about to death, like Brian Bendis came in and brought a super, super grounded approach for a decade. Like it was all political. Even the like Skrull secret invasion stuff was political thriller. Like there was very little, like there was stuff going on in that run that was kind of cosmic and whatever, but you can just read those Avengers comics and like that is a piece of it's telling that that's when like Marvel's readership was at like blockbuster levels. And I think that you always have to come back to that. Like you can't ever graduate from that. Even if you do briefly, you still like, if you stay too far afield, like we lose, like nothing has consequence. Like we don't really understand the emotional stakes. And so I love that, like between this and Thunderbolts. Yeah. Like it feels okay. Yeah. There's all this crazy stuff that's gone on, but now let's kind of just like, let's recognize that this is a world that's experienced a blip that has like a celestial hand coming out of it, which we see a shot of in this trailer,
which I love.
But also, you know, it's still a real world. Like it's a world that's going to feel lived in. It's not going to give way to pure fantasy, which I think is really important for the MCU.
Totally agree. And I don't think I realized the degree I agree to that, which is why I think it was a 4 out of 10. But then seeing this, I'm like, yeah, I have missed this. I have needed this. And that's coming from somebody who, in general, is higher on like Black Widow than a lot of people, partially probably because of that. It yeah. is good. Like my dad's going to love this movie. And so I'm already stoked to watch it with him right yeah. now. Shout out Kevin, if he's listening, just because that's the kind of stuff that made him fall in love with the MCU.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like that was the MCU in 2013 and 12 and 8, you know?
Yeah. Well, I really do think, I mean, we were just talking about this with the Russos and them being kind of the engine. I mean, that all came in through the Captain America franchise. And mm-hmm. so it's like we think of RDJ as being so central, and obviously he was the central figure. But it's also like the Iron Man trilogy was over and done by 2013.
Yeah, right.
And then like the things that were like other than Avengers Age of Ultron, the only other movies that were kind of moving us towards the finale consistently were the Captain America movies. Like, that's what, those were the big ones. And so it is like, while Tony Stark and RDJ is like the heart of the MCU from the Infinity Saga, I think that it's easy to undervalue what the Captain America franchise brought. Like, whether you're a fan of that character or not, that was a way for them to kind of give you consistent check-ins on like the political reality, like the on the ground stuff, like just showing you like, this is what the world looks like at this moment, like mm-hmm. when it's not ending. Like,
yeah, right.
And so I think that that's really important. And,
like, we still have presidents and we have racism issues and, you know.
And I love, like, to me, the Hulk as a villain here, I love, because one, we haven't had that in really any way in a long time, but also like that feels still like the whole Secret Soldier thing has always been bound up in the Hulk. So it makes sense there. Like, that doesn't feel shoehorned in. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect Captain America villain. Like, if that's where this is heading, where he's having to fight this Ross turned Red Hulk, like, yes, he's way outmatched, but I love that it's still like, it's a guy that probably got something injected into him. And
I think that's only going to be a part of it.
I think that's probably true. I mean, cause we also have like, we have the leader obviously, and we have,
which I'm excited about. Yeah, do we know who's actually playing it?
Yeah. It's Tim Blake Nelson from Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
And his voice is in the trailer, which I think you only know if you watch the subtitles, but.
And then another new Warlord character that we recognize from
The Mandalorian.
Mandalorian, for sure.
Giancarlo Esposito, I think.
Yeah, right.
Who I love as an actor, and I know he's been really excited to get involved.
Yeah, he's
posted
a lot about it. Yeah.
That's like a super unknown character. Like, and it's a very minor character in the comics.
Oh, I thought it was new for the film. No, it is a comic character.
It's basically new. It's like such a low-level character that I think that they're choosing it so that they can do whatever they want with it.
Yeah, because he had just said something like, no, I'm actually playing a character you've never heard of. Or
yeah, it's like, kind of a throwaway, like 90s era thing. But what do you think, like, from that, what is your prediction as to, like, the Celestial Hand? You think that's just like an Easter egg, or you think that that's going to be like a
no, it's some kind of military base. Because the missiles kind of come out of it. I do think it's going to be more, not foundational, but there's going to be something going on there. They're either harvesting adamantium or, I've heard that as a theory. You know how like in Guardians of the Galaxy, when they go to the severed head of the Celestial, it's got all this different stuff and properties.
Yeah. Oh, that's so
maybe
so
there's
true.
Something like that, that all of a sudden now there's a new material on Earth because of it. And so someone's set up a base there, or I don't know. It's going to be not just a throwaway thing, I think.
Dude, that makes so much sense.
And it also is perfect. It's perfectly fitting for Kevin Feige leaning into that stuff. Like we always talk about.
Yeah. That's
and we've
great.
Already talked about like twice on this episode.
Yeah. And I did not think about the mining the Celestial Head, but that's so true. And you know, like I think what we said in an Eternals episode probably, but there is also a period in fairly recent comics where the Avengers are based out of a celestial, like a dead celestial basically.
And I think it would be cool if it was adamantium. Vibranium would be cool too. But I think, since we've talked about how they're basically the same substance in comics, but they had to differentiate different ways, blah, blah, blah. I think that'd be a great little perfect tiny Easter egg into like mutants coming or whatever, is that it's actually a new substance. And here's a perfectly explainable reason why it's new right now. Like, why haven't they found it before? Because it was only in this celestial that just emerged because of the Eternals.
Yeah.
And now there's vibranium and adamantium. And maybe you make it a little bit different too, where adamantium is incredibly durable and sharp, like you see in Wolverine, et cetera. But maybe it can't also be birthed from flowers and be used to make high speed trains. And like maybe it's a different, you know, maybe you start distinguishing the two.
Yeah. I think that's a really good call.
If it's vibranium, I'll still enjoy it, but yeah, it'd be fun if it was different.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, it's also, Man, you know what? I've wondered sometimes what Thanos's sword is made out of that he's able to cut through Cap's shield like he does. Every time I see that in Endgame, I'm always thinking like, well, vibranium is basically indestructible. And the way that is taking the shield apart, it's not just like this is a vibranium weapon hitting another vibranium weapon. It's like this is something that's stronger than vibranium that's out in the universe.
Maybe.
And so I wonder,
or just like, vibranium being wielded at that much more strength from.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. But yeah, I mean, but also they're able to Vision is made of vibranium, and whatever spear they have can like stab through Vision. Like, there are metals out there
for sure
that like if they want to like, or materials, you know, like they've kind of established it. This like,
let's get deep into the metals
hierarchy, metallurgy,
the metal hierarchy. There's of the MCU is about to change. No, I'm really stoked. I'm sure there's a few things we're missing. I also just thought the editing of the trailer is really great. The flashes of Sam in his different outfits to the beat, bum, 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 different
Sams.
There's a shot where Sam throws his shield and then it shows the White House falling apart kind of at the same angle as if like the shield was going through it. It's not. I'm really excited for the ground level side of this whole thing. And I wonder, leave it to Kevin to take something like this that seems like it's going to be inconsequential to the cosmic multiversal side and watch them sneak something in there towards the end.
Yeah.
That's going to have lasting ramifications in the future, you know?
Yeah, I mean, man, that's the fun thing. And you and I were talking about this earlier with just the multiverse saga as something called the multiverse saga. And I think a feeling that I miss is that like, and maybe it was just because I wasn't plugged in enough at the time, but also I think these things weren't covered as heavily as they are now. But like in the mid 2010s, you know, when we were getting like right around the time we were getting like Ant-Man and you get that post-credit scene leading to Civil War. Like, I love that I just never knew where, like, what was coming from where. You know, like,
right.
It was like, how is this going to tie in? Like, does this, like, Doctor Strange, you suddenly see Thor, but it's like in Ragnarok, you see Doctor Strange after the post-credit scene in Doctor Strange. And it's like, you don't know to expect that, but then it makes so much sense. Like, I think what's weird about the multiverse saga is we've had such a long runway that we're kind of in this position of like, okay, well, how is this going to all lead to here? And like, what's the connection there? And it takes away a little bit of that like surprised delight that you get from like, I would love to go to Captain America and have just zero idea of what's going to come out of that. Like what the post-credit scenes could look like, but also just like, the status quo shift.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that like Winter Soldier again, like I don't think that I ever would have thought that movie would end with S.H.I.E.L.D. just not existing anymore. But like, that was a massive status quo change that then you're like, now what's going to happen?
And right.
And I'm excited to like the idea that we're getting some things that I just don't know anything about and that don't like even touch at least like visibly on the multiverse stuff. Is exciting to me, not because I'm tired of the multiverse stuff, but because I like having like no blueprint in mind. I like not looking at everything in terms of a step on the way to Secret Wars.
For sure. Okay. So now is your chance. If you don't want to hear anything about Deadpool and Wolverine, even though it's going to be spoiler free, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. For the rest of you, we'll be right back with a quick preview of Deadpool and Wolverine, spoiler free. So we actually already recorded a spoiler-free initial reaction to the film last night as we walked out of the theater. But now that we're 12 hours later, you and I have gotten a chance to talk about a few more things from Deadpool and Wolverine, spoiler-free, that have kind of changed the way we want people to go into the theater thinking of this film.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like we can help y'all a little bit.
Yeah.
The movie is obviously hilarious. I think it's one of the funniest, if not funniest, movies in the MCU. We had an absolute blast. Like, the entire theater had that Endgame type energy. It's not Endgame, but there was mm-hmm. a good vibe in there. It's funny. The action sequences are full Deadpool. So if you're worried that it's going to be dumbed down, it's not at all. It's full Deadpool. It's a perfect ending, if you will, to the Deadpool trilogy. And it's just a really, really fun, wild ride.
Yeah.
Maybe is the way to say it.
Yeah.
I want you to frame your mind going in slightly differently. This, to me, is a little more of a ode to the Fox universe and the Fox chapter.
Yeah.
And a swan song for those characters than it is the next massive MCU game changer entry. And I do think it's important you know that, not just because we're protective of the MCU or something weird like right. that. It's that I think as a fan, you will get even more out of this film if you go into it that mindset. Go into it thinking, I want to have a ton of fun at the theater. I want a blockbuster again. I want to just enjoy it and feel okay enjoying it. Like, I'm not going to get chastised for laughing out loud at this part. And then also, man, if you love the Fox universe, this is for you especially. Yeah. You're going to get a ton of that stuff. And if that's the mindset and you're not carrying the weight of expectations of this film being a quote game changer in the MCU storyline. It's a game changer in some of the way it's made and stuff like that, but a game changer for the storyline of the MCU. Don't carry that weight going in. That's what I wanted to say today.
I think that's right. I mean, as I've been thinking about it, you know, I think these multiverse movies, there are a lot of dangers with the expectations that are set. And sometimes I think that what we think we want going in actually wouldn't make for a good movie. Like,
that's a good point.
When we talk about the multiverse of madness that maybe people were expecting, we talked about this recently on our episode, rewatching that versus what we got. A lot of people were like, oh, you know, I wish we got a lot more multiverse shots. But then you can also imagine a world where we got, because I remember some reviews of that movie were still saying it was too bloated, like too much stuff going on. Like, if you had any more, you could see people saying this is just a collection of cameos and scenes and there's no real story there. So I think that, like, there are all these things that we kind of have swirling around in our head going into a movie like this.
Yep, good point.
And I think that it's just, you're exactly right. Like, this is, to me, for like a maybe even more so, like if you're a big X-Men fan or a fan of like really any of those films that have come out, you know, from 2000 to 2019, this will be for you what I think No Way Home was for a lot of like hardcore Spider-Man fans, like just fans of the character, but also fans of these different iterations. And I think like there are differences for sure. But I was like, you and I had this conversation going in talking about how the big difference was like, oh, but you know, No Way Home was really just a Spider-Man story. And this is going to be like a big new tentpole thing in the MCU.
It's kind of No Way Home meets Guardians 3. Yeah. Somewhere in between there.
I think that's right. Which is a great combo.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
But I think that the expectation game is really dangerous. And I think if people just go into it recognizing that this is the next chapter of that Deadpool trilogy.
Right.
And it's happening as he's being folded into the MCU. I think you're going to be really, really happy with what you get.
It's similar to Guardians 3 in that Guardians 3 focuses on the Guardians.
Yeah.
And that kind of wraps that trilogy. This movie, similarly, is really focused on Deadpool and that trilogy being a final story.
Yeah.
it's a little more like No Way Home in that it does dabble
right.
in reflecting on the Sony universe, but this movie probably goes even further than that in its impact on the Fox universe.
Yeah.
And maybe not as far in its impact on the MCU universe as No Way Home. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, talking about Multiverse of Madness and No Way Home and all this, I do think what's funny is this movie, like, if you were to take that title, like the Multiverse of Madness, that you were saying, like, part of the issue with the Doctor Strange right. second movie is it just doesn't necessarily live up to that title.
Imagine if it was called Doctor Strange 2, for right. example.
Whereas here, like, I actually do think that if you called it like Deadpool and Wolverine and the Multiverse of Madness, in some ways that would kind of fit here. Like, it is very multiversey. Like, I don't want to undersell that, but I just think that the Guardians 3 comparison is so accurate to me because, and I think it's important here as we're setting expectations, because people were so excited to go see the conclusion to this trilogy, and they knew it was going to be well done, and no one thought, because James Gunn had been very clear about it, everyone knew he was going to DC, like, no one wanted that movie to do anything except tell a really great Guardian story and, like, leave everyone with a good taste in their mouth. And that's why I think there were very little conversations after Guardians about, like, oh, but it didn't really move anything along.
Good point.
And I think that if people go in with that mentality here, where, like, it is definitely more connected than Guardians 3, but what you need to focus on getting out of this is just a really great Deadpool Wolverine story, and not get too, like, just some of the inflammatory language around it, I think it can really, it can mess with your experience watching it.
I agree. And the chemistry between Reynolds and Jackman is at an all-time high. And so let that kind of carry the film for you, because that is the fun part of it. I think if that's the mindset you go in with, Deadpool fans are going to love it. It's exactly what you want. And I think if you take that mindset in, MCU fans are also going to love it as a chapter into the beloved MCU.
Yeah, I think just in general, too, the action is so fun, I thought.
Yep.
Like, the visuals in general, like...
The needle drops rock.
Oh, the needle drops are so great. Like, it's all just... Like, the mechanics of it, that's the other reason I keep thinking, like, Guardians 3. It's right. just, like...
The nostalgia and the comic book nature of this. Oh, like, if man, you're a yeah. comic fan, the characters you're going to see, it's such an ode to your nostalgia.
There are a couple of moments where, like... I think what I love so much about this... being Deadpool and Wolverine, like, it is very much the conclusion to the Deadpool trilogy. It's also very much a, like you said, an ode to the Fox universe, but it's recognizing that Wolverine is, like, one of the most famous superheroes ever, and was really, like, the prototype for, like, someone that, you know, like RDJ, like someone that can maintain like a whole franchise like that.
Right.
But because of the era in which most of those movies came out, like before the MCU, there are a lot of things that we just never got from the character. And it was by no fault of Hugh Jackman's. Yep. But like this movie recognizes that and goes out of its way to
address it.
Yeah. To give you all of the Wolverine kind of dream scenarios that you could ever want. And that to me is so, like, that is in and of itself enough to make this movie a blast to watch.
We both thought it was a tier one film. We'll be adding it to our rankings really shortly. But in general, we loved it. And we think if that's the mindset you have, you're going to love it too. Thanks for subscribing to this channel. Thanks for listening to this podcast. We'll see you next time right back here on Friends From Work.
Yeah.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.